Welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selena Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pevitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship, and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside. Hello and welcome to another Project Love podcast episode and the third in our Life in Lockdown series. How you doing, Vicky? How you doing day 1,000 billion of lockdown here in London?
Well, the sun's out today, so that really helps. Yeah, I feel that my mood is very weather dependent at the moment. So it's sunny outside and I'm feeling good.
Would you say you're fine? Do you know what? Monday, which is the day that we record this, is normally my sad day. It's the day that I wake up and I'm like, oh, the reality of what we're living in really hits me. But actually, over the last couple of weeks and today, I'm actually starting to feel, I don't know if I feel like there's light at the end of the tunnel, and I've started convincing myself yet again that we'll be out of lockdown in a matter of weeks, which I did from day one, by the way, and here we still are. But yeah, I feel like when I'm going to the shops at the moment, people seem brighter, more relaxed, less anxious and nervous. Like the people in the shops are saying hi, you know, like looking and smiling, and there seems to be more, well, certainly I'm finding that out in the world around me, there seems to be more of an upbeat, relaxed air amongst people. Are you finding that?
Yeah, I've definitely found that. It does feel like the mood outside has lifted a lot. And I feel, you know, over the last 2 months, is it 2 months now?
Yeah.
Is it week? Yeah. Yeah, week nine this week, isn't it? I really feel that it's been riding those waves of the ups and downs over the weeks. And for me, it's felt like a grieving process. And I'm now in the acceptance part of that process. And I might go back to other stages. But at the moment, it's definitely, I'm more in the acceptance phase of that.
Yeah. I had to say, I went this weekend to see my parents, and we sat socially distanced in their garden. We're lucky they've got a garden so we can do that. And we're also lucky that we live an hour away. So it wasn't, you know, they're not the other side of the country. And that made a big difference, being able to see people in person, even though you can't hug them.
Yeah,
you and I were talking about that, weren't we, Vicky, that on Zoom, you can't just relax and sit looking at the clouds with a friend. You're just focused on each other. It's quite intense. And I think that's a real thing. There's no relaxation. You know, so much when I'm with my girlfriends, we sit, we relax, we laugh, but there's a lot of pauses and just being together and stillness and just being in the presence of one another.
Yeah.
And I think you miss that with Zoom. And I know, I mean, I don't have a lot of Zoom chats outside of our Project Love-ins every Monday, which I love, but there's a structure to those rather than just people trying to kind of imitate a hanging out together. That doesn't feel as relaxed as it would if we were in person.
Yeah. I've found the same thing. And I feel really grateful that we have access to technology like this, you know, in lockdown, and we can virtually connect. But I definitely think there's been a love-hate relationship with Zoom over the weeks. At the beginning, it was like, oh my God, let's just, you know, just say yes to all the Zooms and all the FaceTimes. And then after a few weeks, you realize how exhausting that is, and just like needing a bit of a break from it. But I think that's exactly it. You're just it's a much more intense experience than it would be in real life. And I think there's been some studies on it about body language and how it's difficult to read people. Our friend Eve was saying this on a Zoom that we did with her group meditation Zoom a few weeks back, and she was saying that it's really difficult to read people's body language. So if you're in a meeting with a group of people and you're having to use Zooms, FaceTimes for work, then you're having to use a lot of energy trying to sort of read people online as well.
Well, I think there's also the struggle with conversation doesn't flow.
Yeah.
And, you know, you might be trying to say something and no one can hear you trying to say it. And then do you use a hand system? And then it's like, this is not normal, the normal way we have conversation. And also, I think even just this, apparently the strain of with, you know, trying to hear what people are saying. If your connection isn't good, or their connection isn't good, or they're freezing, even the kind of the level of just the sound quality and the extra effort required to just even follow the conversation, and I just and then also the visual, you know, isn't brilliant. I find it I find it a bit not stressful, but it's, I don't relax in the way I would if I was hanging out with people, which is what was so lovely about then seeing my parents in the flesh this weekend. And yeah, and it was actually quite good because it meant we couldn't do any helping with the cooking or the washing up. So we were served. It was like a private dining experience. I was like, I could get used to this. They were like, yeah, as soon as lockdown's lifted, you'll be back in the kitchen helping out. But yeah, that was lovely. But today, we're going to talk about working from home during lockdown. So for some of you, it'll be the first time you've ever worked from home. Some of you have always worked from home, and I've been working from home. I don't always work from home like the whole time. I often mix it up with going to cafes and getting out and about. So that's been different. But I'm not used to working from home with the house full of noise, as I've had. And you and your husband work from an open studio flat with a dog, don't you? So that's been new. So we thought we'd talk about just tips on working from home. There's a lot of study. Well, the study Arianna Huffington was talking about in her newsletter that came out this week, about how productivity companies have seen a drop in productivity, which is to be expected, and I think should be absolutely allowed, because to the backdrop, a global pandemic is, and the accompanying grief and anxiety and uncertainty that's going to be pulling at your attention and your energy the whole time. Of course, you're not going to be as productive. And I think that should be allowed for and accepted and understood. And just, it's to be expected. But also what it's bringing up is the boundary between work and home is now so blurred. So if you're always used to going to work, going into an office or a co-working space, or even just getting out, I did a podcast episode with Emma Gannon all about staying sane while working from home. And she's worked for herself for, I don't know, years and years, but she'd never worked from home before. So she'd always gone away from home to work, and was finding that lack of transition, the actual physical journeying to your place of work, missing that. It was like, well, what do I do now? I don't have that transition away to work and then coming away from work and back to home. So we thought we'd talk about that, didn't we, Vicky?
Yes.
have a good old chinwag about that. And also I've been doing, I mean, it's good timing for me because I am in the final 10 days of writing to meet the deadline for my book on burnout. And in that, I talk a lot about designing your day, and particularly designing your working day so that you can thrive, and really looking at what you can do to set yourself up to be in the right headspace for work, but also to switch off after work when you either go home, or if you work from home, when you kind of put your down tools and transition from work to home. So how have you found during lockdown working from home? Because you've always worked from, well, sort of part from home, but you often go to cafes, don't you? Or did back in the day. So how have you found it? We'll do one day again.
Yeah. So not used to working from home every day, all the time. I'm used to having options of, you know, nipping out and going to a cafe, or sometimes working from a co-working space. And yeah, it's been interesting. I think the first few weeks, because me and my husband have both been working in our open plan studio, as you mentioned. So no doors apart from the bathroom. So there were lots of, in the first few weeks, there were lots of, you know, Google Hangouts and Zooms and things that we both needed to do. So we're trying to, that involved a lot of negotiation and shifting things around to accommodate both of us. So yeah, the first few weeks were definitely a little bit challenging, but we're in a groove with it now. But what's been really great, and it's such a good discovery that's come out of this, is I've realized that my desk, that's usually quite near to my husband's desk, my desk fits perfectly next to our bed on the other side of the studio. And in between my husband's desk and my desk is a wardrobe. So it feels like it's kind of like my office, basically. I'm calling it my office.
Yeah, your pop-up office.
Exactly. So I can, when I've got Zooms and things that I need to do, I can create my pop-up office. It takes about 4 minutes to do. Wheel everything over to the other side of the studio. It's right by the window. And yeah, I've got really nice little space there. So that's working really, really well. And I'm so glad I figured that out.
That's brilliant.
You know, probably about a year I've been trying to figure out a way that I can have my client sessions on Zoom in the flat.
Yeah.
And before lockdown, you know, this was a major thing for me, and I can't believe the solution was right under my nose the whole time.
But that's the thing, and this is something I was saying actually right at the start, when people were suddenly finding themselves at home, maybe they didn't have very few people do have their own home study, and I was saying, you know, have a think about how you can create that space for working in rooms in the house that you perhaps wouldn't normally use. And this is, you know, yeah, during lockdown, but also outside of lockdown. You know, if you've got, like, obviously people quite often use a spare room if they've got one, but I was saying, you know, your bedroom or a kid's bedroom, like, you know, when your kids are at school, obviously not right now when you're homeschooling, but to use those spaces with and create pop-up workspaces. So I've got exactly the same. I've got a collapsible table that's currently in our, because we're still in the middle of sort of putting our house together, it's in the sort of miscellaneous room that has everything in it: toys, TV, and now my desk. But anyone else that you're living with, letting them know, right, this is the space that I need for, you know, and I need this to be my space where there are no interruptions, which is something what I'll talk about in a moment with, you know, the importance of knowing that you're not going to be interrupted when you're doing deep focus work. And do you have a thing then? Do you sort of like, does your husband sort of go, okay, so that's your workspace during working hours, so he doesn't come in and clatter around and make a noise? Does he kind of, do you each sort of respect your workspace?
Yeah, now we do.
She can't speak too much about it because, of course, he's right near her.
Exactly.
You just give me one word answers and I'll ask you the question. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, I think it's really important that, and it's, well, I'll talk now about that importance of having uninterrupted space. One of the things that I've been finding fascinating in my research is about open plan offices and what a terrible place they are, really, for people to be working in. Like, there are certain degrees, like, obviously you could be together and you've got that camaraderie. And, you know, when you're doing like the light mundane tasks where actually you're quite welcome to have a bit of entertainment around you, a bit of chat, then great. But if you're doing any kind of deep focus work, which pretty much everyone has to do as part of their job, whether it's getting your head into a spreadsheet or it's writing content or it's, you know, figuring stuff out or whatever it is, you need to know that you've got a set period of time where you can get into that work and not be interrupted. Because when you're interrupted from deep focus work, it takes on average 23 minutes to get back into it. And in an open plan office, you get interrupted and distracted every 3 minutes on average. I was speaking to a friend of ours who, you know, has to do a lot of deep focus work and is always being distracted where she works. And she was just like, but hang on. The figures don't add. How does anyone get anything done? And I was just like, exactly. This is what I mean. It's, you know, so it's really important when we do go back to work that we do find ways of having that, you know, uninterrupted time when we need it. But likewise, when you're in the home and it's having conversations, whether it's your work colleagues at work saying, I'm going into this meeting room for an hour, please don't interrupt me unless the office is on fire. And the same with if you live with people, housemates, family. If you need to do deep focus work, you need to say, I need to focus on this for the next hour or so, unless it's really important, is, you know, please no interruptions, because I need to do this. Which is why Vicky and I, before we press record, were sort of saying, you know, it's interesting that, well, productivity rates have dropped. There's been a study that has said by, I don't know how many percent, but yeah, productivity has dropped. And Vicky, you were saying you were sort of quite surprised by that in a way, weren't you? Because you would think that without the distractions of the office space, that you perhaps would realize you get more done. Because that is usually what happens. When you start to work from home, you go, oh my God, I get so much more done. But you're not normally doing that during a global pandemic, which I think is what's making all the difference.
Yes, that is a big difference, isn't it?
I think it's a few things. I think it's either if you are, which pretty much everyone is finding the whole coronavirus, being in lockdown, you know, the uncertainty, the fear, the grief of it all, like I said before, that's such an emotional draw, that's drawing your attention and your energy, that it's obviously going to affect your productivity. I think also we're such creatures of habit, and we have so many things that are automatic that we perhaps don't realize until it's all taken away. So even for me, moving into a different room, I had to really, at the beginning of lockdown, really do things to get myself into, like, okay, work mode. Like, I was putting on dresses, I was like having little rituals that I was doing to get into work mode, because I'd moved where I worked, you know, because whereas before I was used to working in the kitchen, so I'd sit down and just, whereas now I'm back into that, now this is my new workspace, I don't have to do so many things to get myself into work mode. I just open up my laptop and go, because now this is this is where I come to do my work. And now that ritual, that habit is now ingrained. I don't need to do so many other things to get me into work mode. Do you know what I mean? So if you're taken out of that, I think some people just might have been used to, oh, I've got so-and-so in the corner who I ask about this kind of stuff. And now I can't just ask them a question. I have to now arrange a Zoom chat or text them, or, oh, normally I have these things over here, or normally I do go over there to do that stuff. And now, you know, it can be really discombobulating to not have, not just the, yeah, to not have the physical space that you're used to doing things in, even if you can do it all from your laptop. So I think there's that. And actually, I think that, yeah, while the travel to and from work is in a way you're not doing that, so you might think that's added time where you could be doing things. I do think that's an important transition time into work mode and out of work mode that perhaps people didn't realize that they used it for that. So, you know, you finish your breakfast, you get your clothes on, you walk out the door in that, say, hour commute into work. You might not have realized before how much you used it to get into the headspace, think about what have I got ahead for the day, almost like planning for the day. You know, you're walking, you're thinking. You might not have realized actually what a powerful ritual that was for you to get into work mode. And when that gets taken away, you could be wondering, I don't know, it just takes me all morning to get into work and to like get my head into it. And it could be because you've without realizing it, those were actually quite important rituals that got you into the right headspace. And without them, it's taking you longer. So I think there's a lot of aspects that people don't realize once they're taken away, that's what's also causing this sort of difficulty to focus.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the same as you transition out of work mode. And our friend was saying this, she said she usually has an hour cycle after work.
Yeah.
And that really helped her to de-stress. And with that being taken away, she said she was then running and having like should have a morning run to get ready for the day, but then nothing to de-stress afterwards. So then, you know, it's having to adapt and establish those rituals in a different way.
Yeah, because you know, so that's a perfect example. Cycling home at the end of the day, you might have decided, oh, I cycle to keep fit. I cycle because it's quicker. Yeah. I cycle because I don't like using the train or the tube or the bus or whatever you used before. But you might not have realized actually how that cycle is your way of switching off, disengaging with work and releasing stress. So if you haven't recognized that's what it was doing for you and it gets taken away and you think, oh, great, I don't have the journey to and from work. What you don't realize is you've taken away a really essential part of your day that helped you to unwind, de-stress and disengage. And suddenly with it gone, you're like, why am I feeling so stressed all the time? So this is why from a life design point of view, I find it really fascinating to kind of get into it and for us all to then be more mindful about what we're doing in the morning to get ourselves just ready for the day and grounded and energized and nourished, but also like then step into work mode and likewise at the end of the day to sort of step out of work mode. And I think there's that, that's the other thing that a lot of people are talking about, is this blurred boundary between home and work, which you and I have obviously been in practicing this for many, many years since we've been working from home and working for ourselves. What do you do to make sure, well, I don't know how good you are at doing this. Are you good at making sure that the boundary between work and home is clear, or does your work seep into your weekends?
Not anymore. It used to, because I used to coach on the weekends.
Yeah.
But no, not at the moment. And yeah, I'm finding that when I have my pop-up office, it's really easy to then stop working, because once I pack it all down and move it
exactly
back to it where it was, I don't then go to the other position and you know, work from there. That's the day done. So that really helps,
yeah,
as well. And I'm just also trying to limit my laptop usage to my desk. I mean, I'm not like 100% perfect at this, but I could be tempted to just sit in bed and work from my bed or work from the sofa, but I'm trying to limit my limit work to just being at my desk,
yeah,
and leave my laptop there, so that I'm not sat there,
yeah,
not thinking about work, because then I want to in the evening, you know, a few feet away, you're then getting into your free time,
yeah,
and on the sofa. So if I've been working here all day, then it's kind of difficult to put a boundary around work and around free time. So that's really helping, actually, just the location.
Yeah, exactly. Having a dedicated area that is the work zone, and outside of that it's home. So you don't allow, and that, again, so making physical boundaries by location, but also boundaries by time. So that's what I do tend to move myself around, because for me, doing the same thing every day, just repetitive, like just monotony, just kills me. I need variety. So I do like to move around. I was even attempting to work in the garden in a deck chair, which, as we all know, screen glare does not work. But, you know, I gave it a try with like a towel over my head. I was like, this is too much. But yeah, what I've been using is, because we've got our son at home, so we've been playing around with doing different times where, okay, this is my work time, and outside of that is my time to be at home with my son. So actually that becomes then the boundary. And during that time, I have, you know, it's about being with my son and being at home and doing home stuff. So mine is a time boundary. And whether you have kids or not, you can also use that and be like, right, my work starts at this time and ends at this time, and at that time, downing your tools, putting them away, packing them away. If you have everything out, it can be too tempting to go, I've just got an idea, I must send that email. It can be a good idea to have a notebook lying around. If you do suddenly think of something that you want to remember to do it, just write it down, you know, rather than thinking, oh, well, I'll just go and send that email now. No, just go and remember to send this email, so that when you do sit back down to work, then, you know, you've got it all there. But it requires discipline. It requires being mindful and recognizing that at first it can be tempting to just, I'll just check an email, I'll just send this off. But creating rituals, little rituals to, right, at the end of the day, have a cup of tea, and that signifies, you know, the work is done, and I don't pick up my work again until the next day, you know, in the morning at a certain time. And having those, it's really important to have those clear boundaries to yourself. And if you live with people, then asking them to hold you to account, you know, if they see you, be like, what are you doing? Thought you weren't going to work now. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, I was just going to, oh, you caught me. Thank you. You know, because it is, it's so tempting. I mean, I will always be a recovering workaholic. You know, it's just, it's in me to want to just use every second and think that that's how I'm going to get ahead as fast as possible. It doesn't work that way. But that's what I can sometimes think. But I do want to mention something as well in terms of productivity and focus, is that to really slice up your day. So a book that I've been reading by, I've got to remember their names, Tony Schwartz and Jim Lohr. It's called The Art of Full Engagement. I don't think it's called something like that. And they talk about it's so important not to treat your working day as a marathon, but treat it as a series of sprints. Because when there's this ultradian rhythm that we all have, where for about, say, 90 minutes, your brain is naturally on kind of high activity. And that's obviously the time when to focus and to be writing emails and thinking about work and doing work. And then it naturally dips. And your brain activity, you have lower brain activity for about 20 minutes. And at that point, you need to naturally just stop and rest. And you'll usually notice it's the time when you start yawning and wanting to kind of procrastinate and looking around and probably wanting to just go on your phone and check, you know, what's people saying on WhatsApp. But actually, that's the time to step away from your screen and just go and take a 20-minute break and come back to your work. And then when you come back to it, you'll find that when you've really properly just switched off from it, I don't know, go for a walk around the block or go and lie on your bed or listen to music or, you know, do some star jumps, whatever you want to do, or make a cup of tea. Then when you come back to it, you'll be focused again and your brain activity will be on full power again. And if you try and push through that and ignore your body signal saying to rest, you have to push yourself into fight or flight mode to override that. And that's where you start getting into the stress cycle. So that's where you're just, and in order to override it, when you're like, oh, I could fancy a rest. I feel like having a bit of a break. And that shitty committee inside your head will be like, you haven't got time for that. And it will start piling in all the arguments. Remember, if you start slacking now, this will happen. That's the anxiety, gives you the burst of adrenaline that you need. I spoke to a doctor in research for my book on burnout. She's actually a friend of mine, an old school friend of mine. And she said that she deliberately makes herself run almost late for most of her appointments. And I said, okay, well, that's the first thing we can do here is add on 5 minutes, add on 2 minutes. She went, no way. She said, that is a deliberate strategy of mine to get my adrenaline pumping to get me through the day. And I was like, oh my God. And she was just like, yeah. So no wonder she's been living in a state of burnout for since she started medical school, because she's been deliberately, constantly overriding her body saying, please rest. And that's what happens. And with our work culture is so celebrates the person that can just keep going and that just grabs some lunch sitting at their desk. But actually, all the studies show that that is not the most productive person in the office. The most productive person in the office is the person that takes a break every hour for about 20 minutes. And all the studies show that. But in our work culture, the person that is celebrated is the person that can keep powering on. And actually, it's what is causing so many of us to be so exhausted by the end of the day, apart from anything else. But it doesn't. It makes you less productive when you're in fight or flight mode. Your IQ drops. You aren't able to think clearly. You can't access the part of your brain that you would use for higher thinking and intuition and reflection. And you can't bigger picture. You get tunnel vision. Like it's just it's fascinating because it just shows that the way we're working at the moment is not. It doesn't. It's not good for productivity. It's definitely not good for happiness and health. And it's, you know, definitely one of the reasons it's contributing to burnout. I think this is an exciting time for people to actually explore what really works for them when they're working and to find a way for them that actually really helps them to work in a way that they can feel energized rather than pushing their way through the day. Every day until they collapse at the end of it. Because then you get into the cycle. You're so exhausted at the end of the day. You go home. All you want to do is flop in front of the TV, have a glass of wine, and then we're into that cycle again.
So if people want to try this, is that the Pomodoro technique or is that, similar to Pomodoro?
So Pomodoro is can fit in really nicely with it. So Pomodoro technique is a sort of time management tool where you do 25 minutes and have a 5 minutes. You put your timer on. It's really good if you have a tendency to procrastinate. It's really good if you struggle to focus. It's really good if you're low on energy. So it's a brilliant tool to use at this kind of time when you're, if you are feeling quite anxious or, you know, you're having a difficult day, you put on a timer for 25 minutes and you go, right, what am I going to focus on? I'm going to do this 25 minutes. Cause it's like, I can do that. I can keep my attention for 25 yeah. minutes. When the alarm goes off after 25 minutes, you take a 5 minute break. And then you do another 25 minutes and a 5 minute break, another 25 minutes, a 5 minute break, another 25 minutes. And then you take a 20 minute break. So you do four rounds of that and then take a longer 20 minute break. So that can really work. I sometimes do that. So the time, the sort of work session for most people is in the ultradian rhythm. And again, experiment. Is between 80 minutes and 120 minutes. So between just over an hour to 2 hours of focus time and then take your 20 minute break. So the Pomodoro can kind of fit into that. But I think as long as you, I mean, the way I like to look at it is you start your day, you have 11s, you have your morning break.
Yes.
You do another work session, you have your lunch. You do another work session, you have your tea time. You know, you stop for tea and a biscuit around 3, which by the way, 3 and 4 p.m. is where your ultradian rhythm and your circadian rhythm like combine to be your lowest energy point. So that's why a lot of us have that massive slump in the afternoon.
Yeah, so I always crave tea then.
Yeah, so actually, if you're working from home and you've got those, you know, you take a 20-minute break in the afternoon, that can be a brilliant time to fit in a quick workout, do some vigorous mopping of the floor, dance around the kitchen for 20 minutes, and it will really get your energy up. Vicky and I have talked about this a lot. One of my big realizations, which I shared with her, was about how doing exercise, as two women who've resisted exercise for most of our adult lives, that doing exercise actually charges up your batteries. And so often we don't want to do it because we think we don't have the energy for it. But actually doing some activity, doing some exercise, it seems so silly now, doesn't it? Now we've realized the truth about exercise.
Just so funny. One time we were recording a podcast on your bed, on your son's bed, and we were just like talking about exercise. Like, it gives you energy. Having our minds blown.
I know, the revelation of it. So if you do that, you know, so it might feel counterintuitive, like in your afternoon dip at 3 p.m. and you're like, oh my God, I don't have any energy to do any exercise. Actually doing movement, you don't have to do a workout. You could just go for a walk, you know, to your local park or just pop to the shops or, you know, do any kind of movement should energize you and boost your energy again. And actually, I think during lockdown, global pandemic, I don't try and do a full day of work. We've spoke to a friend of ours. They work, their company has told people to take 10 hours a week of well-being time, weren't they, during this period? Mm-hmm. Because recognizing that people were really needed more time for themselves, more time to do things that help ground them and lift their spirits. And, you know, because it is so important. We can't expect to be going on as normal while life isn't normal. You know, and I think, you know, recognizing that for yourself and for companies should hopefully be recognizing that too. But I think it's an exciting opportunity to just try some things out to see what works to help keep you energized throughout the day as much as possible.
Yeah.
And little things really make a big difference. The thing of doing the breaks and really allowing myself to rest. Don't go onto your phone in those breaks. Jumping from one screen to another is not effective switching off and resting. Your brain needs to change gear a lot to stay kind of energized. So focusing on a screen doing work and then focusing on a screen to speak to your friends is too similar. You need to go off. You need to let your mind wander or chat to a friend or go for a walk, move your body. But jumping from one screen to another as a break it's the same and then the same. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
I've experienced that. And then your eyes go really, your eyes start stinging because it's like going from one thing to the other.
Yeah.
And I think in the first few weeks of lockdown, WhatsApp there's quite a lot of buzz there, let's say, on WhatsApp. And I was really doing that. I was then taking a break and then just catching up on all the WhatsApp messages and then going back to my laptop. And my eyes were just stinging.
Your eyes were going square. This is what we tell kids. If you stare at the screen for too long, they'll go square. I still say it to my son. He checks his eyes. He's like, they're not square, are they? I was like, I think you're all right for today.
And how do you recommend that people plan their weeks? Is it like planning your week in advance, or is it sort of planning day to day, or does it just depend on the person?
I think it depends a lot on the person. Am I a planner? I mean, I have things scheduled in, and then I'll start my day and have a few things that I want to focus on. I'm remembering back to the days when I wasn't just doggedly working on a book and just writing and writing and writing. And I did used to have different things scheduled in. I think it depends on you. If you have lots of different things on, it could be really useful to use your calendar to make sure that everything you need to be giving time to this week has its place. It's really important. It's really important not to have just the list in your head, just circling around and around all week, remind you, don't forget you have to do this. It's like, sit down, all the things you have to do, have them on a list, and then move them into your calendar. So everything, you know, like in the sort of having a tidy home, everything has its place, which FYI is not my home. This is an area that I am very much still a work in progress. I'm looking around me and I'm like, that is not how I live. But it does give you peace of mind. And it's the same with your to-do list. You should not have your to-do list in your head. Our short-term memory can only hold on to 7 things at any one time. And when you think how much we're trying to probably remember and keep in our heads, it just causes a lot of stress without us realizing it. So to just ground you and kind of calm you down, particularly if you're feeling overwhelmed, then yeah, writing down all the things you know you need to do this week and then creating time for them, space in your calendar. So then you know, okay, it's fine. Everything's got its time. As long as you then follow the calendar, then you can kind of relax a bit. And I think also, you know, because we're so up and down, everyone's energy is so up and down at the moment because of what we're going through.
Yeah.
That I think some days you're just not going to have the same energy as you did yesterday. And you don't know from one day to the next, or even 1 hour to the next, as we've said before, how you're going to be feeling and where your energy is going to be at. So, you know, if you do need to take a bit of time off, and get outdoors and just, you know, shake things off and then come back to your work, then okay, so that day maybe you didn't spend quite so much time, you know, sitting in front of your computer doing work. But I think we just have to be forgiving and compassionate of ourselves and just do what we can on each day with the energy that we have available to us, and not try to just push ourselves through, which is really hard, you know, because some people still have a lot of work on. So they're having to keep up with their workload while also dealing with all of the emotional fallout of a global pandemic. So I think it's really important as well to recognize that after work, doing things that help to fill up your cup and help to energize you and help you to really switch off from work so you can renew your energy. And, you know, if you are finding things hard, if you're suffering a lot of anxiety or feeling low or feeling sad or lonely or whatever it is you're feeling, then really do things, really dedicate time to doing things that lift your spirits, that allow you to be playful and have fun. And remember that we can have fun during these times. And really dedicate time to that because, yeah, like I say, sitting in front of the TV and having a glass of wine is so often a go-to for a lot of people because that's what our culture often is, the go-to of our culture. Oh, sit in front of the TV and have a glass of wine. But actually, that's not the most effective way of renewing our energy and lifting our spirits. In fact, I'm sure there's research out there, isn't there, about watching TV. You go into almost slightly depressed state, I think. So it might feel like it's switching off, but actually it's not a switching off that's renewing your energy. It's just more of a kind of coping mechanism and a numbing and an escapism, which is not a recipe for energy renewal or happiness. So yeah, finding things, which I think a lot of people are doing. You know, we're seeing so many people talking about they're starting new hobbies and they're getting outdoors a lot and, you know, feeling far more in touch with nature. So I think people are naturally doing things, enjoying the simple pleasures in life as a way to help them through these times. So just making sure you keep those things going. But yeah, I've spoken a lot. Given you all the information, all the information that I've got on working from home and boundaries between work and home. But so much of what my writing has been about this, because we do have such an unhealthy approach to work in this day and age, and we need to change that, because it is definitely one of the things that's contributing to such high levels of burnout, is that we don't know how to switch off. We don't know how to renew our energy. We don't know how to keep our energy topped up through the day. And I'm really excited about, you know, sharing all this stuff and doing more classes on it. But hopefully with that, all the stuff I've just vomited out, you can start taking some of it and experimenting and seeing what works. And of course, also making sure you're nourished. You know, if you're someone who gets into work and forgets to eat and looks up, it's 3 p.m. and you haven't really eaten all day, then that will make a difference. And the water, drinking lots of water, you know, the stuff that we're told over and over, and it's so easy to forget. When you're in a stress mode, when you get into that stress mode, you detach from your body. You don't feel, you don't sense your body. And that's deliberate, because when you're in fight or flight, you don't want to, I've talked about this before, haven't I? You don't want to, you know, if you're running away from the tiger, feel that ankle that you've twisted. And so you in fight or flight, you deliberately, your body and your mind more kind of disconnected. But that's why we can skip meals and forget, don't notice we're hungry. And so we do have to be more mindful about putting those things into our day, nourishing ourselves to energize ourselves. You know, that's the food is the fuel. I'm saying this because I used to forget. I was so bad at this, particularly when I was younger, when I had such bad habits or lack of looking after myself, that I would go all day without eating anything and then wonder why I was so tired all of the time. It's because I wasn't putting fuel into the car. It was so weird. Why the surprise me?
I was definitely more of a marathon type of worker. You know, you were talking about the sprints versus marathons. Like, that was always me when I used to work full time in an office. I would definitely marathon through the day, and I'd do like 12-hour days, sort of standard. And now looking back, I can see why I was so exhausted and always, you know, sort of in and out of that pattern of burnout. I just think this is such a brilliant time for the messages and wisdom that you're sharing and everything this book contains. I just think that people need this now more than ever. I'm so excited for people to get their hands on your book when it's out there in the world and ready for people to read. I just think, like, what a unique time we're living in, and what an opportunity, as you say, to experiment with this and find new ways to live and work that helps us to thrive.
Yeah. Well, once the book is written and I've given myself a little break, a mini holiday of not doing any work for a few days, I definitely want to be maybe a whole week. We'll see. It may coincide with my son going back to school, so I won't know what to do with myself. That would be amazing. But I will definitely, I've already got ideas in mind of the kind of coaching programs I want to offer and sort of online masterclasses and things on this kind of thing. So I will announce it here on the podcast when that starts emerging. But first things first, focus, book, get it finished. Man, this last month I was loving the book writing process, and then I entered into the editing and the approaching the deadline zone, and all the meltdowns started happening, and it's been hard this last part, but I am feeling excited about it being finished. That's spurring me on, and I'm really excited about what I'm going to be sharing, so that will inspire me today as I get back to it. So shall we finish there? I think that's lots. Yes. Okay, great. I think that's lots of people to go off with and try out. And we'd love to hear from you if you've got any questions, and also actually what you'd love to hear us talk about with life in lockdown with this series. I keep thinking, well, maybe next week it will be, we'll be all out again and we won't need to do it anymore. But I think we've got a few more weeks to go.
Yeah.
I think we've got a few more weeks to go. But I am looking forward to the episode where we talk about lessons learned from living in lockdown and how we can, what we want to carry forward with us. I keep thinking, are we ready to do that yet? Just a little bit longer, certainly here in the UK anyway. But yeah, do let us know what you'd like to hear us talk about. What things, what kind of guidance you'd love from us on life in lockdown.
So let us know how you get on with exploring and experimenting with some of the ideas that we've mentioned. We always love to hear from you. Just drop us an email at hello@loveprojectlove.com, or you can DM us on Instagram at loveprojectlove, and we'll catch you next time.
Yay!
You've been listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoy this episode. And if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes, and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say, best podcast ever. Thank you.